Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to those on the webcast as well. Thank you for joining us today. It's a beautiful Sabbath day. It's been kind of a rainy, stormy week, so it's nice to see the sun shining so brightly today. You know, many times when I give a sermon or a message, I start off with something of things that have in common. I do that today. What does Moses, King David, Gideon, Ruth, Esther, and Daniel have in common? You could probably say, well, they're all in the Bible, which would be true. But all these men and women accomplished things in their lives that most would have believed was impossible. You know, we seem to identify with those in life that are sometimes called underdogs or those who overcome setbacks or disadvantages in life and triumph over them. You know, America, you know, loves the underdog. There's many movies, there's many books about men and women or businesses or teams that were successful, as I said earlier, either improbable or maybe impossible odds. It's interesting, last year, the end of last year, there's a movie entitled American Underdog. It was based upon a book by Kurt Warner, All Things Are Possible. You may or may not know who he is, but he was a quarterback for the Super Bowl winning Rams of St. Louis. He went from stocking shelves at a grocery store to being in the Super Bowl and winning the most valuable player in the NFL twice in his career. He ended up playing football later on in his life, much later than most people would have started. Often wondered why so many teams overlooked someone like that. I haven't watched the movie or read his book. I found it interesting in what I wanted to talk about today. Have you ever wondered why God has called you or brought you here today? Why God has called you at this time? To be able to understand his great plan, to be able to make sense when you read the Bible, to understand the great questions of life. Why are we here? Why were we born? You know, we have the opportunity at this time through God's calling to understand his Ten Commandments, his instructions. We have the opportunity to grow in godly love and in his righteousness. But we realize with that opportunity comes great responsibility. You know, how can we possibly become like Jesus Christ, become a disciple of his? How can we possibly become righteous and holy like God our Father? In our minds, in our actions, in our hearts, how will we be able to do these things? Well, today I want to look at these examples that I gave you in the opening of men and women from the Bible and see how we can accomplish what God has called us to be now and in the future. How can we accomplish this? The title for today's message is All Things Are Possible with God. All Things Are Possible with God. I mentioned Moses, King David, Gideon, Ruth, Esther, and Daniel. They're all names that are familiar to us, but they conquered obstacles in their lives that were many, as I said earlier, were thought were impossible. You know, they're examples for us. They overcome problems and setbacks, and we can do the same in our lives as well. The first point I want to bring out today is we need God's help. We will need God's help. If you turn to 1 Corinthians, we'll read verses 26 through 31. As we look at this point, we need God's help. You know, in the previous verses, Paul's writing that true wisdom comes from God and Jesus Christ. He also describes those that he's working with at this time. I'll read this from the New English Translation. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, starting in verse 26, it says, "Think about the circumstances of your call, brothers and sisters. Not many wise by human standards, not many were powerful, not many were born a privileged position. But God chose what the world thinks foolish to shame the wise. God chose what the world thinks weak to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, what is regarded as nothing, and set aside what is regarded as something, so that no one can boast in his presence. He is the reason we have a relationship with Christ Jesus, who became for us wisdom from God, righteousness, sanctification, and redemption. So that it is written, let no one boast but he who boasts in the Lord. You know, God's not looking for those who are wise according to the human wisdom and the education of this world. He's not looking for those who are powerful, those who may have been born into privileged or powerful families. In other words, if the world was choosing a team, those of us here today would not be chosen, because we are not the strong or the mighty of this world. But God's chose us, those that the world thinks are foolish, those who the world thinks are weak. And ultimately, he does that to shame those who are powerful and wise in this world. You know, Paul states that God's working with those of us here today and those that he calls so that they have nothing to boast about. They have nothing to boast about, and the reason they don't is because we need God's help. And the things that we accomplish in this life, especially in our spiritual lives, is with God's help. You know, we're in a spiritual battle that we need to win. There'll be obstacles in our lives, spiritually as well as physically. And we have Jesus Christ redeeming us from sin, the sin that sometimes besets us. And we also have God's Holy Spirit. So let's look at some of the backgrounds that I mentioned earlier. Moses was born of parents who were slaves in Egypt. God preserved his life from being put to death. And he was also saved when he slew an Egyptian that was beating an Israelite as well and fled Egypt. God protected him. And if you turn to Exodus chapter 3, verses 10 through 12, after he fled Egypt, he was now a shepherd out in the desert. And earlier in this chapter, God had gotten Moses' attention by a burning bush. And God told him that he'd heard the cry of the Israelites who were slaves to the Egyptians. And picking up the story in Exodus chapter 3, starting verse 10, it says, "So now go, and I will send you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." And Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh or that I should bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" He replied, "Surely I will be with you, and this will be a sign to you that I have sent you. When you bring the people out of Egypt, you and they will serve God at this mountain." Moses asked the question, "Who am I to do what you want me to do, God?" Moses wasn't looking to deliver anyone. He was just being a shepherd out in the desert. But God told him that I will be with you. I will be with you. It's interesting. Another one that I mentioned in my introduction was King David. Samuel went to Jesse's house to anoint one of his sons the next king over Israel. King David, or David, had seven older brothers. His father thought so highly of him that he didn't even have him show up. He left him out shepherding the sheep, tending the sheep. But he was the one that Samuel was looking for. He was the one that God wanted to anoint as king to succeed Saul. Return to Judges. Judges chapter 6, verses 6 through 12. We'll look at another example. This is where God is calling Gideon. And during that time, the judges were ruling the nation of Israel as they continue to waver between keeping God's commandments and being oppressed by the nations around them due to their inability to keep God's commandments and his way of life. In Judges chapter 6, we'll start at verse 6. It says, "So Israel was greatly impoverished because of the Midianites, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. And it came to pass when the children of Israel cried out to the Lord because of the Midianites that the Lord sent a prophet to the children of Israel, who said to them, "Thus says the Lord God of Israel, I brought you out of Egypt and brought you out of the house of bondage. And I will deliver you out of the hands of the Egyptians and out of the hands of those who oppressed you and drove them out before you and gave you their land." Verse 10, it says, "Also I said to you, I am the Lord your God. Do not fear the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell, but you have not obeyed my voice." Then the angel of the Lord came and sat under the timber tree, which was at Ophrah, which belongs to Joash the Abizite, while his son Gideon threshed wheat at the winepress in order to hide from the Midianites. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said to him, "The Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor." Can anyone look at how Gideon was living his life and state that he was a mighty man of valor? He was hiding, threshing wheat so the Midianites wouldn't take it from him. It's interesting, in Albert Barnes' notes on the Bible, talks about this mighty man of valor that he was told he was. Albert Barnes' notes on the Bible states this: "Known to God to be such, though as yet not known to be such either by himself or by his countrymen." You know, God saw something in Gideon that he could say that he could be a mighty man of valor. You know, does God see things in us that we don't see in ourselves? Does God see potential that we have with his help that he could unlock? I think that he does. Continuing on in verse 13, Gideon said to him, "Oh, my Lord, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are the miracles which our fathers told us about? Did not the Lord bring us out of Egypt? But now the Lord has forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites." And the Lord turned to him and said, "Go in this might of yours, and you shall save Israel from the land of the Midianites. Have I not sent you?" So he said to him, "Oh, my Lord, how can I save Israel? Indeed, my clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house." And the Lord said to him, "Surely I will be with you, and you shall defeat the Midianites as one man." Gideon stated that his family was the weakest of the tribe of Manasseh. He stated that he was the least in his father's house. God chose the weak of the world to do things that many would believe would not be possible. You know, each of us here today have an opportunity with God's help to become something that we cannot even imagine that we can be. It doesn't matter our background, where we started, but sometimes we limit ourselves what we think we can do. But we should never do that. Don't limit what God can do within each of us here today. God's not limited. God is all powerful. Another example I want to look at is in Ruth, in the book of Ruth. Turn to the book of Ruth, we'll read in chapter 1. We read about a woman in the Bible that we know the story about. As we continue to look at examples of needing God's help in someone's life. In Ruth chapter 1, we'll read verses 1 through 5. It says, "Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land. And a certain man in Bethlehem of Judea went to dwell in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons." You know, this was still at a time that the judges were ruling, and most likely there was a famine in the land because the Israelites were disobeying God. Continuing on in verse 2, it says, "The name of the man was Elimelech, and his wife's name was Naomi. His two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephraites of Bethlehem and Judea. And they went to the country of Moab and remained there. Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died and was left with her two sons. Now, they took wives of the women of Moab. The name of one was Orpah, and the name of the other was Ruth, and they dwelled there for 10 years. Verse 5, it says, "Then both Mahlon and Chilion, also died, so the women survived, two sons and her husband. You know, in the following verses, Naomi hears that the famine is over in Judah, and she wants to return back to Bethlehem. Her two daughter-in-laws start to return with her, and she tells them to turn back and go back to their parents' or their mother's houses. We'll pick up the story continuing on down in verse 14. Verse 14 of Ruth chapter 1, it says, "And they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. Then she said, 'Behold, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law.' But Ruth said, 'Do not urge me to leave you or turn back from you from following you. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Thus may the Lord do to me, or worse, if anything but death parts you from me.' And when she saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more to her." And skipping down to verse 22, verse 22 tells us, "So Naomi returned, and with her Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, and they returned from the land of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest." You know, to truly understand the story of Ruth, you need to understand where she came from. She was a Moabitess, it says. She lived in the land of Moab. The land of Moab and the people of Moab was not God's chosen people. In fact, Balak, the king of Moab, had confronted the Israelites on the way to the Promised Land. You remember, he had hired Balaam to curse the Israelites, which God would not allow. Balaam did, however, tell Balak that he could entice the Israelites to sin and that God would punish them, which ended up happening with 24,000 Israelites dying in a plague due to worshiping Baal and committing sin with the women of Moab. Trying to say the word harlotry. Ruth had made quite a commitment to Naomi. She told her that she would not leave her, that she would go where she went. Wherever she went, she would go as well. She says, "Where you die, I will die. And your people will be my people, and your God, my God." Ruth was making a complete change in her life. She's making a complete change moving to the land of Judah. The first point I brought out was we need God's help. The second point I want to bring out is it will take commitment and courage. It will take commitment and courage. Merriam-Webster's definition of commitment is an agreement or pledge to do something in the future. Commitment's often associated with a statement of purpose or a plan of action. To receive all God's help that we will need in our lives, we have to make a commitment. We make that commitment when we're baptized. We have to make that commitment that we're going to submit our life to Him and allow Him to lead us. It's not a one-time commitment. It's an ongoing commitment that we make. It's a commitment that we need to never forget. If you turn to Daniel chapter 1, Daniel's life was a life of commitment and courage. We'll read verses 8 through 10. Judah had been taken over by the Babylonians, and they'd taken some of the youth and captured them. They brought them back to Babylon to teach them the literature and the language of the Chaldeans so that they could serve the king. And they would do that for 3 years. They were given the food from the king's food and wine, and they'd be trained, as I said, for 3 years. Picking up the story in verse 8 of Daniel chapter 1. It says, "But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, 'I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your food and drink. For why should I see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? then you would endanger my head before the king. You know, Daniel had made a request. He didn't want to defy himself with the king's food. God had gave him favor with the eunuch who believed that if Daniel was wrong, that he might lose his head in the process. You know, in the following verses, Daniel asked for 10 days for himself and his three friends that they be allowed to eat vegetables and drink water. Picking up the story in verse 14 of Daniel chapter 1, it says, "So he consented with them in the matter and tested them for 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in the flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. Thus the steward took away the portion of the delicacies and the wine, and they were to drink, and gave them vegetables." Daniel and his three friends were committed to living God's way of life. Oftentimes that commitment will be challenged in the world that we live in. It will take courage to stand up for our beliefs and to do what we know is right. You know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego showed their courage and their commitment when it was tested that whether they would bow down to the graven image or the large idol that Nebuchadnezzar had made. Remember the story that they survived being thrown in the fiery furnace. Have you ever wondered where Daniel was that day? Where was Daniel? The Bible doesn't tell us, but somehow he missed out on that test or that that came to his three friends. But later on in his life, he lived through something similar, had a similar experience. You turn to chapter 6. Chapter 6, we'll read verses 7 through 10. The king now is King Darius. And Daniel's still serving the king, just like he had all these years. He's serving the king so well that those others who were serving the king could see that Daniel was winning favor with King Darius. So they came up with a plan, something that to eliminate him so they could win favor with the king. And starting in verse 7 of Daniel chapter 6, and this is from the New Living Translation, it says, "We are all in agreement, we administrators, officials, high officials, advisors, governors, that the king should make a law that will be strictly enforced. Give the orders that for the next 30 days, any person who prays to anyone, divine or human, except to you, your majesty, will be thrown into a den of lions." In verse 8 it says, "And now, your majesty, issue the sign and sign this law so it cannot be changed. Official law of the Medes and Persians cannot be revoked." So King Darius signed this into law. And verse 10 tells us, "But when David learned that the law had been signed, he went home, knelt down as usual in his upstairs room, with the windows open towards Jerusalem. He prayed three times a day, just as he'd always done, giving thanks to his God." That decree was not going to change what Daniel did. Daniel continued to do what he'd always done. You could think, well, maybe he should go to the inside and pray in an inside closet or something. But that's not what Daniel did. Daniel continued to worship God and continue to pray to him three times a day. Brethren, his resolve was tested, but he had courage and commitment. And we know what happened. He was thrown in the lion's den, but the lions did not devour Daniel. Daniel had a close relationship with God, and he was fully committed to that relationship. And he looked to God for his help and his deliverance, as we talked about in point number one. You turn to Esther. The book of Esther is also a book that we should be familiar with. If you turn to chapter 4, or verses 13 through 17, Esther was a beautiful young Jewish woman who had been selected to be queen, which is a remarkable story in itself. Since she was a foreigner in the land after Judah had been taken captive and conquered, she'd survived and was now in captivity. You know, Esther tells us her father and mother had died, and her older cousin Mordecai looked out after her, as the Bible tells us, as his own daughter. You know, in the previous chapter, a man named Haman had convinced the king to sign into law that would allow the Jews to be attacked and destroyed on a certain date. Mordecai had sent a message to Esther saying that her people needed her help. And we'll pick up the story in Esther chapter 4 and verse 13. And Mordecai told them to answer Esther, "Do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" In verse 15, then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, "Gather all the Jews that are present in Shushan. Fast for me, neither eat nor drink for 3 days and night or day. My maids and I will fast likewise, and so I will go to the king, which is against the law, and if I perish, I perish." And Mordecai went his way and did all according to all that Esther had commanded him. You know, Esther was looking for God's help. She was looking for God's help, but she showed commitment and courage in a very difficult time. You know, Mordecai reminded her, "Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" Brethren, do we know what God is preparing for us in the future? We know somewhat what God's preparing us for, but we don't know exactly what will happen in this physical life. We know that we battle spiritually every day with this world that's going a different direction than God's way. It takes commitment. It takes courage to live in this world. It takes commitment and courage to live God's way of life. The third point I want to bring out today in this message, "All Things Are Possible with God," is that we need to have faith and trust in God. We need to have faith and trust in God. You know, those that we've looked at so far knew that they needed God's help. They had commitment, they had courage, even when situations appear to be against them. You know, Daniel, we looked at the example of Daniel. We also looked briefly at the example of David being anointed the king at a very young age. Saul had been rejected. If you turn over to Samuel chapter 17, 3 verses 32 through 37. You know, Saul had been rejected by God because he compromised with what God clearly commanded him to do. And God had picked and chosen another man to replace him. And David, early on in his life, had showed his faith in action in how he lived. We turn to 1 Samuel chapter 17. And we'll start reading in verse 32. This was after David's father had sent him to take food to his brothers. Goliath, the Philistine champion, was challenging the Israelites for 40 days, evening and morning, for someone to come fight him. Picking up the story in verse 32, it says, "Then David said to Saul, 'Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go out and fight with this Philistine.' And Saul said to David, 'You're not able to go up against this Philistine and fight him, for you are a youth, and he is a man of war from his youth.' But David said to Saul, 'Your servant used to keep his father's sheep. And when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of his flock, I went after it, and I struck it. I delivered the lamb from its mouth, and then it rose against me. I caught it by the beard, and I struck and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing that he has defied the armies of the living God.'" In verse 37, it says, "Moreover, David said, 'The Lord will deliver me from the paw, who has delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear. will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go and the Lord be with you. We know the rest of the story. David did kill Goliath with a sling and a rock, and the Israelite army routed the Philistine army. David reminded Saul that God had always been with him. He had been with him against the lion, against the bear that attacked his flock while he was keeping them. You know, God wanted David to become king. Part of the reason was because David had faith in him. David had faith. It's interesting. We read after this that Saul was trying to kill David, tried to kill him, chased him all over. But David continued to put his faith in God and continued to be committed to God. He wouldn't even lift his hand and refused to let his men allow to kill Saul when he had the opportunity as well. You know, David was a man of faith. Another man of faith was Moses. Moses was a man of faith as well. If you turn to Hebrews chapter 11, Hebrews chapter 11, we'll read verses 23 through 28. We'll read this from the New English Translation as well. You know, the book of Hebrews gives us some insight about the faith that Moses had in his life. A little bit about what I've already talked about, but also tells some things that we sometimes forget about Moses. Hebrews chapter 11, and starting verse 23, it says, by faith when Moses was born, his parents hid him for 3 months because they saw the child was beautiful and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith he grew up. Moses refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be ill-treated with the people of God than enjoy sin's fleeting pleasure. Verse 26, he says, he regarded the abuse suffered for Christ to be greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for his eyes were fixed on the reward. By faith he left Egypt without fearing the king's anger, for he persevered as though he had seen the one who is invisible. In verse 28, it says, by faith he kept the Passover and sprinkling the blood so that the one who destroyed the firstborn would not touch them. You know, Moses did not think that he could do the things that God wanted him to do. But he grew in faith. He didn't embrace the opportunity, but he went and did what God had told him to do. And God used him for a very special purpose. He used him to lead the Israelites out of the land of Egypt into the promised land. And Moses, with God's help, delivered them from Pharaoh's hand. With God's help, he provided water and protection. And that was through Moses' leadership, through Moses being steadfast and putting his faith in God. It was interesting, in verse 27 it states, he, Moses, preserved as though he could see the one who was invisible. He persevered as though he could see the one who was invisible. The New Living Translation says, he kept on going because he kept his eyes on the one who was invisible. Brother, my last point today is we'll need perseverance and endurance. We'll need perseverance and endurance. To persevere and have endurance, we need to keep our eyes on the author and the finisher of our faith, of our salvation, which is Jesus Christ. You know, everything that we do in this physical life and what we do spiritually in our lives, it will take perseverance, it'll take endurance. It doesn't take much of that when everything's going well, but brethren, we know in this life everything does not always go well, either physically or spiritually. You know, everyone that we looked at today had to go through perseverance and endurance in their lives. You know, during that time, they looked to God for their help. They were committed. They had courage. And they also had faith and trust in God. You know, it took perseverance for Moses to lead the Israelites out of Egypt into the promised land. How many times did the Israelites test Moses? They complained, not only tested Moses, they tested God. They complained, they murmured. They talked about wanting to return back to Egypt. But Moses continued leading them as God had commanded him to do. He didn't give up. He didn't walk away from it. He accomplished great things with God's help and deliverance. But he persevered. Don't need to turn there, but in Second Samuel chapter 5, verse 4, tells us David was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned for 40 years. We don't know how many years David spent fleeing from Saul, who was trying to kill him. But if he was 20 years old when he killed Goliath, that would have been 10 more years before he became king. He had a lot of difficult times in those years before he became king. If you turn to Psalms chapter 59, we'll read verses 1 through 4. This is a prayer from David that was recorded when Saul was sending men to his house to have David killed. And I'll read this from the New English Translation. Psalm chapter 59, starting in verse 1, it says, "Deliver me from my enemies, my God. Protect me from those who attack me. Deliver me from evildoers. Rescue me from violent men. For look, they wait to ambush me. Powerful men stalk me, but not because I've rebelled or sinned, O Lord. Though I have done nothing wrong, they are anxious to attack. Spring into action and help me. Take notice of me." And skipping down to verse 16, it says, "And as for me, I will sing about your strength. I will praise your loyal love in the morning. For you are my refuge, my place of shelter when I face trouble. You are my source of strength. I will sing praises to you, for God is my refuge, the God who loves me." David went through many difficult times before he became king. It was a great trial for him to be on the run, to be always looking for someone to hurt him. He had to persevere. He had to endure. You know, later on in his life, when he became king of Israel, some of his sins caused him great pain and heartache in his life as well. He had to endure those things as well. Some of those that were brought on through his sin, even though he repented, even though he changed, he had to persevere and endure. Return back to Ruth. We looked at the story about Ruth earlier. After losing her husband, she told Naomi, her mother-in-law, that she would never leave her. And so they went back to Judah, back to Bethlehem. But Ruth showed great perseverance and endurance as well. After they'd returned back, she was gleaning the fields that Naomi told her to go to do. Gleaning fields is hard work. It's hard work in the heat. Through gleaning those fields, though, she met Boaz. And Boaz would later redeem her and take her for his wife. It's interesting in Ruth chapter 3:11, Boaz said this about Ruth. It said, "And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you as all you request. For all the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman." Picking up the story in Ruth chapter 4, verse 13, it says, "So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And when he went into her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, 'Blessed is the Lord who has not left you this day without a close relative. May his name be famous in Israel, and may he be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is better to you than seven sons, has borne him.' And then Naomi took the child and laid him on her bosom and became to him a nurse. And the neighbor woman gave him a name, saying, 'There is a son born of Naomi,' and they called his name Obed, and he was the father of Jesse, the father of David." You know, the book of Ruth tells quite a story how a young woman from Moab went to Judah as a foreigner and became part of the lineage for Jesus Christ. That should be an encouragement for all of us. No matter where we come from in this life, God can be there for us. But it'll take the things that we looked at today. You know, as I conclude this message today, we looked at some of the examples from men and women of the Bible who accomplished great things. They had God's help. They were committed. They had courage. They put their faith and their trust in God. And they continue to persevere and endure and achieve what God had called them to do. Brethren, I want to leave you with a question today. What story is going to be written about us? What story is going to be written about us? You know, we are the weak of the world, but the God that we serve is not weak. He reigns and rules over all supreme. He's given us the opportunity to achieve great things, not just for ourselves, but to become his children, serving him now and serving him in his kingdom. Will there be difficult times? Yes. Will there be times where we stumble and fall? Yes. But brethren, God will be with us. God will help us to endure those times. He will help be with us physically as well as spiritually. If you turn to 1 Corinthians, we'll look at chapter 15, verses 57 through 58. You know, earlier in this chapter, Paul describes the resurrection and how the physical will put on immortality. In verse 57 of 1 Corinthians chapter 15, it says, "But thanks be to God who gives us victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord." Brethren, Jesus Christ has redeemed us. We just went through the days of unleavened bread and the Passover. We have an awesome opportunity to be a part of God's family and his kingdom. Don't ever doubt what God can do in us. We may be the weak of the world. We may be underdogs. We may even view ourselves as that sometime. But the God that we serve is a God of all power and all strength. Let's be sure that we let God and allow God to work with us in our lives, because all things are possible with God.